Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need to get ready for Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back because they know small businesses can make a big difference. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain you, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. You know what? I've been thinking all weekend. This is a market that deserves to be hated. It has virtually nothing going for it except misery and an occasional desire to give misery company. Sadly, the indices are a complete and total reflection of everything that's really happening in the world today. And that's why even though we're oversold here, even though we can put on meager rallies that look terrific at the time, we just can't seem to escape the jaws of the bear.
Sell, 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 sell.
That includes daily today.
Sell, sell, sell.
Dow advanced 27 points. S&P dipped 0.39%. But the NASDAQ tumbled 1.2%, including a lot of your favorites like an Airbnb, a Dash, a Block. I mean, these things are just getting pummeled. Now, there's a very simple reason why the bear keeps mauling us. It's because we have no right to be going higher. The forces aligned against the stock market are incredibly powerful, and each day a new one comes up to smack you right across the face with negativity. Last night, before I finished work for tonight's show, I checked the overnight markets. I like to do that. They look strong. I was kind of surprised. Then again, hey, the market finished well Friday, so maybe there was something to build on. Of course, I was fooling myself. I can tell you right now, this kind of wrong-headed thinking has characterized the whole move down. Something to build on. What a joke. You can't build on quicksand. Sure enough, I wake up at 4 a.m. and the futures are down. Why? Well, China's posted some terrible consumer numbers. But did anyone expect anything different? Vast swaths of the Chinese economy are in lockdown. How the heck is business supposed to be good? You think they're making a lot of stuff, selling a lot of stuff? People in Shanghai can't even leave the house. From the West, it looks like the only thing they do is test each other for COVID, not a GDP expander. What is incredible is that our stocks still sell off on this stuff again and again. And that's because there's hope and then the hope is dashed. But I understand it. Do you want to be the person who's not in? When President Xi finally says, okay, we're inoculating everyone with the mRNA vaccines we stole from whoever, the market would be up so huge that day that you'd be kicking yourself if you aren't in stocks. Yet it's so obvious that Xi has no intention of relenting, so what's the point of hope? Then this morning after working out, I read some article in the British paper, I don't know, which says that Putin has blood cancer, at least according to some unreliable nameless oligarch. For a moment, I think to myself, geez, that'd be something. Who would possibly prosecute this war if Putin dies? It's so pointless that you'd have to think the Russian generals would back off if they didn't have Putin's gun to their head. So, of course, you're hopeful. But then one more gigantic American company, McDonald's, pulls out of Russia completely, and you know there's nothing going right there. Unless Ukraine or some disaffected oligarch manages to assassinate Putin, there's no endgame here. If Putin wants to turn this into Russia's Vietnam, he can keep throwing men into the meat grinder for ages. Why not? We did. As long as this lunatic is alive and in charge, we're not going to get any good news from the stock market. We might get more good news from Ukraine. But it's not like our market is rallying on reports of Russian retreats. It hasn't yet. You have to expect a massive army call-up soon, which would have the advantage of at least informing the Russian people how horribly the war is going. But that's not going to topple the Russian government. You got to understand, dictators can't afford to lose wars that they themselves started. It makes them look weak, and a weak dictator doesn't live very long. That's why Putin has every incentive to keep this war going forever, even if that's catastrophic for the country he's running. I don't even know if he cares. And then there's us. I come in this morning, Dave Costin, he's an incredibly good analyst from Goldman and just a good guy, has come up with a list of stocks that are extremely cheap based on absolute basis and relative to treasuries. But it's also in the context of cutting the price target for the S&P 500. Oh, huge and correct bear Mike Wilson, the chief investment officer of Morgan Stanley, has decided the Halcyon interregnum is over and the bear's ready to roll again. If, like me, you were foolish enough to believe he might just declare victory and go positive, well, you're kicking yourself right now. I read, I said, oh, Mike Wilson, maybe he's going to declare. No, he's sticking with it. Oh, and then here's some real cynicism. If it matters, JetBlue launches a hostile takeover for competitor Spirit. Competitor. They're like next to each other in every single airport, so they do go at it, hammer and tongs. But now it's supposed to be together. Yeah, sure. I'm almost falling off my Aeron chair laughing. Do these lawyers and investment bankers even for one minute, that this Justice Department will let a deal as blatantly anti-competitive as this one go through? Doesn't JetBlue know that the nation elected a fellow by the name of Joe Biden, in part to stop corporate consolidation and encourage competition? How cynical are these advisors? One of the reasons why we've had such terrible supply chain problems that's not talked about at all, except for right now, is that we've let so many companies merge, there just isn't enough competition to build new plants and try to take market share. It's not worth it. That game ended years ago, when previous Justice Departments couldn't anticipate that there might be a day when we wanted companies to compete against each other in a way that benefited consumers instead of hurting them. Of course, the people advising JetBlue on this takeover bid have some sort of intellectual twist they hope will budge the Justice Department. I say, give me a break. I studied closely with Phil Arita, who's the late great antitrust professor of Harvard Law, and I have to laugh at these people for thinking this deal will pass muster. They don't know as much as I do. It's embarrassing. I'm giving these guys D's and sharing with you how ill-advised their thinking is. Then we watch a clip from former Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein and about how a recession could occur, and we should be prepared for it. But what do we do as consumers to prepare for it? Line up a second job in advance? Sell all our stocks? I don't know. Prepare for it. In fall, prepare. Okay, I'll prepare. Finally, if all of that negativity wasn't enough, of course, Bitcoin continues its now legendary collapse as people frantically try to figure out why they even bought it in the first place, other than the fact it was going up. Now, here's what's amazing. Of course, the market actually goes down thanks to all those negatives. But then, like midday, because of all the hope out there, some of the averages start going higher, and then that hope gets the hope machine going again. We start wondering if Russia might be pulling out, or she's coming to her senses in the lockdown, or all the big retail earnings this week, Home Depot, Lowe's, Walmart, Target, are going to be great, and we didn't think about that. Or maybe even that commodity prices might finally come down, which they're not. Yep, this market has two things going for it. One, everyone knows that almost every piece of news is awful. And two, every dip is used to produce spectacular results when we bought the dips, right? So now we think, why should it be any different? Are there bargains, as Dave Costin suggests? Absolutely. Tons of them. Too many of them. Are there other stocks and cryptocurrencies that are still way too high without any sense of where they can go other than lower? Absolutely. Oh, and by the way, can I mention that Twitter's become a fiasco of epic proportions as Elon Musk tortures the company's board and makes a mockery of the entire process while costing people billions and having the time of his life? The point of this litany is simple. A rally based solely on the fact that everything's going wrong is a rally that cannot and will not stand. It has no staying power unless something actually goes right. And the bottom line, so far, nothing's going right. So stop pretending otherwise and just get used to the darn torture, because that's exactly what this market has in mind for you. Let's go to David in Texas, please. David.
Hey, Jim. Booyah from Texas.
Booyah. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
Hey, Jim. My stock is GNRC. Generac recently reported a top and bottom line beat. They also increased 2022 guidance. What are your thoughts on GNRC?
You know, I've been wrong on this. I liked it. I had it in the bullpen for my charitable trust. I took it out because I felt that people thought it was just too connected to housing. But our grid is so darn awful in this country. Ultimately, I think that you're going to make money if you buy Generac. John in New York. John.
Hey, how are you, Jim?
John, what's going on?
Back in the days, we worked with Larry Kudlow on your Kudlow and Kramer TV show.
Yeah, I still got a T-shirt from it. They gave me a T-shirt. Nice. Holds up well. It's blue with yellow. Go ahead.
Hey, listen. So I'm working on a comedy short film, and I wanted to talk about the stock ServiceNow, ticker NOW.
All right. Now, ServiceNow is a real tough one, John, because I can tell you they had the best quarter of any of the large cap tech companies I deal with. The best. I will tell you that Bill McDermott continues to win gigantic contracts. But I will tell you, as part of the bear market that we're in, the stock gets no credit. One day it will be, which is why I would never tell you to sell ServiceNow. But understand, its stock is not a reflection of the business, which is quite good. And I think will remain so. How about we go to Richard in Maryland? Richard.
Hey, Jim, it's a pleasure. Long time, first time. And thank you for taking our call.
Of course. Thank you for calling, man. What's up?
Yeah, Jim, during the pandemic, my wife, a very smart therapist who generally has few opinions about stocks, said to me, listen, I'm seeing clients on Zoom. You should buy it. I didn't listen. But now Zoom has come way down, and I'm thinking it with pilot shortages, jet fuel and ticket prices going sky high, business travel may level off quickly, and hybrid work arrangements are the new normal. Despite competition, Zoom may be a beneficiary. The company is profitable, its PE is not inflated, and it has a sizable cash holding. Is Zoom a long-term buy here?
Our viewers are so smart. And Richard, everything you said is true. The PE multiple is a little too high, but it's you can say it's 23. Here's the problem. Microsoft Teams, Microsoft's gotten very, very aggressive. Satya Nadella is a very aggressive guy. And as much as I admire the work of Eric Yuan, believe it or not, the stock's not down enough to be able to buy with great confidence. I wish I could say otherwise, because I think Eric is a tremendous business person. And my stepson worked for Zoom, and it was just a fantastic outfit. But the stock, I still think, is just too high priced. All right, guys, all I'm telling you is that it's torturous, all right? You and I know it, so, like, let's just accept it, right? Because that's exactly what the market has in mind for you. Now, oh man, on tonight, we're going to try some interesting things. Nucor's pivoting. It's announced it's acquiring CHI overhead doors from KKR, $3 billion deal. I'm learning more about the steelmaker's latest addition with the CEO. Then we're doing a new list of accidental high yielders because the stock market has come down. And then you asked during the lightning round about a company called Masimo. So we're checking in with the company's top brass. They, too, are pivoting to a new style. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Well, What do you do with the world's best steelmaker when the Fed's slamming the brakes on the economy, potentially sending us into recession in order to be able to combat inflation? I'm talking about Nucor, a stock we've had some big gains in for the charitable trust. But from February through early April, we rang the register because the cyclicals tend to get hit when the Fed tightens aggressively. Sure enough, the stock's been pounded over the last month, and we're looking at it again. Nucor's come down so far that it's trading at less than 5 times this year's earnings estimates, but that's because Wall Street's worried these earnings will come down big time in 2023, once the Fed kills inflation, including high steel prices. Now, earlier today, Nucor announced a $3 billion deal to acquire a company called CHI Overhead Doors, which makes commercial and residential garage doors for the North American market. It seemed puzzling to people. Wall Street isn't loving it. The stock dropped more than 3%, but Wall Street has a tendency to misread Nucor constantly. So has the stock come down enough to be intriguing again, despite a challenging environment? Let's take a closer look with Leon Topalian. He's the president and CEO of Nucor, to learn more about this acquisition and what comes next. Mr. Topalian, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you for having me today, Jim. Excited about our announcement and the big day today for Nucor.
All right. So, Leon, why don't you give us the deal rationale? Because some people would say, wait a second, I own a steel company. I didn't want to own a garage door company.
Well, you got both. And so it's just a natural continuation of our strategy we laid out about 2.5 years ago, Jim. As you know, when we've talked in the past, our mission is 8 words. It's to grow the core steelmaking capabilities, expand beyond, and live our culture. And so when we think about the expand beyond piece, the things that have fit into that very nicely is the acquisition of Cornerstone's insulated metal panel building business, the acquisitions of Hannibal Racking and Elite Racking. This company, CHI, is an incredibly well-run company. And if you look at the publicly traded companies in this space, it is an incredible opportunity where they're earning near 30% year-over-year returns. They're growing at a compound annual growth rate of 10%, again, over years and years. So their through-cycle performance combined with Nucor's opportunity to leverage the commercial space creates a home run in our eyes, and we couldn't be more excited to welcome the CHI family into the Nucor family.
All right, now how about the price? I mean, some of these analysts on the call were saying that roughly 13 times trailing 12-month EBITDA, that was a little too much versus if you just bought your own stock back, and that the company did trade at a much lower level 7 years ago.
You know, Jim, it's interesting. And again, Nucor's investment strategy, our capital allocation framework, isn't for the short term of the quarter. This is going to generate huge opportunities for Nucor and its shareholders in the long run. We don't invest businesses for 1 or 2 years and flip them. We bring companies on, great companies that have a strategic rationale and fit. And they are one of the most efficient manufacturers in their space, combined with the leverage and breadth of Nucor and the construction solutions package that Nucor can bring to bear in the warehousing, digital, in the growing economy in those spaces is incredible. If you think about Nucor's building systems group, for example, that we've had for a very long time, that group produces about 10,000 buildings annually. Mm. Every one of those buildings uses 4, 5, 8, 40 doors in a single building. And that's just one small piece of this overall economy and business segment that we can't wait to get started into.
So would you be displacing others who are currently in the warehouse steel business? Because everyone knows, we have Prologis on all the time, and they're fantastic. Everyone knows that this is going to be a huge business and has been because of e-commerce. If you get in on the garage door side, is it possible that you'll get the rest of the steel?
You know, it's certainly something we're looking into hard, Jim. And again, we have a amazing leader in the CEO of CHI, and he and his executive team will remain with the business as we transition to Nucor. And so that is a synergy that we look very much forward to discussing further and capitalizing on as we move forward.
Now, a lot of the analysts seem to want, and frankly, I'm a shareholder, it's a charitable trust and still want, the massive buyback you have. And I didn't think that there was anything that told me that necessarily is going to be a strategy you're going to throw away just because you're buying these guys. I mean, you have a cheap stock, and when the time is right, you'll keep buying stock.
Absolutely, Jim. If you think about what we bought back in Q1, and we already announced in that earnings announcement that we expect and believe Q2 is going to be a record year, the cash Nucor is generating is incredible. And so that strategy, that philosophy is going to be unchanged. We are going to maintain the strongest credit rating in the industry. We're going to maintain a very disciplined approach to capital, and we are going to return at least 40% of our net earnings back to our shareholders. And again, over the last 10 years, if you think about what we've done, we're over 50%. So we will continue to reward our investors in the long run.
All right, so then tell me how the decision-making process worked. Did you go to bankers and say, look, we want to get into warehouse? Did people show you ideas? Did you say, you know what, we have got to stop just being steel. We've got these other everything we bought that's away, that people think is away from our core competence really isn't. I mean, how does it work in your mind and your board's mind?
You know, what we did, Jim, about 2.5 years ago when I took over as CEO, again, developing that strategy is when you're the industry leader and you think about our opportunities as one of the safest, cleanest, most profitable steel and steel products company in the world, well, how do you grow? How do you continue to generate growth, great revenues, and even better bottom line performance? We've got to continue to look for those opportunities that move us one standard deviation, if you will, outside of the traditional right. steelmaking lane. And where the margins are the highest. This business operates outside of the traditional norms of cyclicality of the steel segment. Its projected growth is incredible over the next 3 to 5 years. And so that multiple is, again, against a company that is performing unlike any of its peers in the sector. And some of those are trading at 14, 15, even 16 times EBITDA, Jim.
All right, so Lynn, I think if you're buying this, I mean, there's a residential, there's an industrial, and of course, what Nucor's core competent, well, new steel, that you've got to be still pretty bullish about at least the continent, even though a lot of people are very negative, or otherwise you would just sit on the cash.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. We are confident. And again, we look at our backlogs, we watch the market very close, we have great customer relationships. And we understand the drivers that move the needle in our steelmaking. And as you and I have talked many times on this program, the steel demand in this nation remains incredibly strong. And so as we look forward, we think about the resurgence of what's going to happen on automotive as that supply side on the chip shortage levels itself out. Nucor's growth in that space, in the renewable space, the warehousing, the digital, the e-commerce, all of that digital economy will be built on steel. And again, who better to do it within the cleanest, safest, and the most productive steelmaker on the planet?
Well, amen to that. That's absolutely the case. Leon Topalian is the president and CEO of Nucor NUE, one of my longtime favorites for 40 years. Thank you, Leon, for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jim.
We have Mike back into the break.
Coming up, oops, I yielded again. In a tough market, which stocks have ended up with an attractive dividend? Cramer combs through the cohort next.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
You don't need me to tell you that the stock market's gotten rough. The average has been obliterated over the last 6 weeks. And the future, frankly, as you heard from the top of the show, isn't perfect. But even during difficult times, there are stocks that work. During the dot-com crash, for instance, you did great if you circled the wagons around large-cap recession-proof stocks. At the depths of the financial crisis, you got an amazing opportunity to buy the accidental high yielders, AHYs, we call them, real companies with stable dividends that had seen their stocks come down so far that their dividends sported ridiculously high yields versus the old days. this moment's becoming similar. It's worth sticking with the stock market as long as you stick with the right groups and avoid the wrong ones. The wrong ones being unprofitable tech companies or any other richly valued momentum stocks that have long since lost their momentum. They're usually valued at price times sales, which we don't like here on Mad Money. As I see it, this is not a moment of true systemic risk like 2008. I'm worried about the crypto collapse, and I know it could have wider implications for the stock market than many believe, if only because so much wealth has been destroyed, at least on paper. But I don't think it compares to the financial crisis when most of our major banks would have gone under without a massive federal bailout. That is really not the case when it comes to crypto. So when I see the averages down huge from their highs, I do want to go back to my favorite slowdown play. I like to go back and pick these accidental high yielders. Now, they're the ones that have huge dividend yields simply because their stocks have been excessively punished. Now, back in early March, I tried this. It was right after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And we created a list of 10 accidental high yielders. While the group hasn't done great because the tape's been ugly, it has outperformed the S&P 500. Although, looking back, it definitely needs a few tweaks. On March 2nd, I highlighted Simon Property Group, Dow Chemical, International Paper, Walgreens Boots, Contour Brands, Newell Brands, American Eagle, Pfizer, Innovative Industrial Properties, and Morgan Stanley. Now, on average, this group of accidental high yielders is down 6.7%, not including dividends. Not good. But they're beating the S&P 500 down 8%, and the NASDAQ's down 15%. So remember, for a money manager, it's a relative game. For you, it's probably absolute, meaning that this would have been bad. It would have been bad. But for a money manager, it actually wouldn't have been. Now, look, of the 10 stocks, only Dow, International Paper, and Pfizer have rallied. But the overall performance is really being dragged down by some huge duds like American Eagle and Innovative Industrial Properties. That's a cannabis-focused industrial REIT that was the target of a big short seller hit piece last month. Actually, I thought that report was pretty convincing. They're worried about IIPR's largest tenant, and now so am I. Even if IIPR had no troubles, the cannabis cohort has become so hated that I just can't see it working in the current environment. Oh, and by the way, when I called them, they did not call me back. Not worth trying to be a hero, and not worth ever not calling me back. The other big losers are all retail-related. Simon Property, the number one mall real estate investment trust, Contour Brands, the denim-focused apparel company, and American Eagle, which has indeed become the bane of my charitable trust existence. Of these, Simon's the only one I still feel confident about. They had a good quarter. As they reported, you know, really, this is David Simon, whom I'm always welcoming on this show because he's done such a good job. So we came in too early, and we were too confident about retail. I'm not making that mistake again. At the same time, even a high dividend isn't enough to support a stock in a bad sector, like we saw with Innovative Industrial Properties. That's why we need to high-grade our accidental high-yielder portfolio with an admittance that we didn't get all of them right to begin with. But the one upside of a market that's come down huge from its highs is that you can find a lot more bargains because many stocks actually do get cheaper as they go lower, except for a lot of those ones in the NASDAQ. That said, you got to be disciplined in your approach. Last month, we pulled from the S&P 500, the S&P Mid-Cap 400, and the S&P Small-Cap 600. This time, I don't want to take any chances. We are sticking with the largest of the large caps, the S&P 500 only. We're not even going to look at anything with a yield below 3.5% because the whole point is to find high yielders. You know, that leaves us still, though, with 64 stocks. But remember, the emphasis is on accidentally high yielding stock, dividend stocks that have huge yields because their share prices have been hammered. So we're searching for names that are down 25% or more from their highs. That leaves us with 21 stocks, only two of which were on the last accidental high yield list. And sure enough, it's Simon Properties and then a name owned by my charitable trust, Morgan Stanley. Simon's got a nearly 6% yield and is basically the last man standing in the mall space at a time when people are eager to shop in person. Morgan Stanley is my favorite investment bank because it's been pivoting to the more stable wealth management business. And that's principally the reason why we selected it for the trust. Tonight, I want to highlight five more accidental high yielders. And we've had some of these on the show, and they're terrific. Huntington Bank shares, remember, I thought they were great. Truist, they haven't been on. Best Buy, I love them. They're so good. I shop there all the time. Whirlpool, which we had on, and Digital Realty. Now, Huntington and Truist are both regional banks. This is a group that instantly makes more money every time the Fed tightens because they can pay you roughly the same interest on your deposits and then invest that money risk-free in short-term treasuries and make a big profit. The big national banks have too much capital markets exposure right now, but that's not a problem for the major regionals. Huntington is a Columbus, Ohio-based regional bank that's expanding across the Midwest, and it sports a very robust 4.8% yield. They've got solid deposit growth, solid loan growth, and most importantly, the Midwest is a winner as American companies bring back domestic manufacturing capacity in a world of strained global supply chains. Remember, they also have cheap power. Thank you, American Electric Power. We're polishing the rust off the Rust Belt. Truist Financial is the alpha created by the merger of SunTrust with BB&T back in 2019. It's a major player in the Southeast and the Mid-Atlantic growth areas. While it's taken a few years to adjust to the big merger, they're now putting up excellent numbers. They got a 4.16% yield. Very attractive. Now, next up is a little bit controversial because we said we're a little gun-shy about retail, but it's Best Buy. This might be controversial as the stock has plunged from 142 last November to 85 today. Wow. Where it has a 4.15% yield. Retail's tough, but at these levels, I think Best Buy has been what we call de-risked. While the near-term numbers are less than ideal, management's got some very bullish long-term forecasts, and I like that they're moving like into service space, like an all-purpose home office IT consultant. I've looked at that service. Seems pretty good. And it sells for 8x earnings. Now, that is, Dave Costner put out a great piece from Goldman Sachs today talking about how this stock is maybe the cheapest it's ever been, especially versus interest rates. Now, here's one that's really bugging me, and I mentioned this morning when it was down 6, Whirlpool. These guys are already struggling as the housing market peaks. We know that. Their most recent quarter looked very ugly, but we spoke to management that night, if you recall, and I like their story. Whirlpool now has a nearly 4% yield. It was at 4.1 at one point today, along with a massive buyback that would let them repurchase a third of their shares. Doesn't hurt that Whirlpool's selling its laggard European business. There'll be multiple buyers. It's something that could fund even larger dividends and buybacks. I like the situations where the company's buying right alongside you. Finally, there's one that is so boring that I have to ask you to please stop worrying about whether something's exciting or not. It's called Digital Realty. That's a real estate investment trust that owns data centers. Historically, this stock's been on the expensive side, and you rarely get a chance to buy it into weakness. But Digital Realty's now fallen from 178 late last year to 128 today. It's got a 3.8% yield. I don't know if that yield's going to go higher. I love the data center business. It's not going anywhere. Bottom line, there's no need to be a hero in a challenging market. Instead, you want to take shelter behind stocks with AHY, accidental high yielders. And that means Huntington Bank shares, which we've had on, and I think it's terrific. Truist, I described that to you. Best Buy, we've had them on. I think it's de-risk. Whirlpool, I thought they were terrific when they were on. And finally, Digital Realty. Let's go to Scott in Illinois, please. Scott.
Booyah, Jimmy Chill.
Yo, man, how you been?
I'm doing really good. I hope you are, too.
I had such a great weekend. I'm rolling. What's going on?
Weather's beautiful in Chicago. It's surreal to talk to you, Jim. Just wanted to tell you how much my 7 children and everybody down at Mr. Blotto love the Mad Money program and love Jeff Cramer. We got an eye on a stock, Jim. It's down about $60 from its high. It reported great earnings. It was rewarded, and then everything was taken away. Jim, do you see a buy level in the future for Visa?
All right, look, Al Kelly, who runs Visa, was on our show. It was a great privilege. This is an amazing company, okay? And it is not expensive anymore. It's down a great deal. I am urging you, Scott, to stay the course. You and your 7 children. My executive producer's husband is from Chicago, so we have lots of good things to say about Chicago. And I think you'll be just fine in Visa. Just have a little patience. It's a great American company. All right, everyone, take shelter behind stocks that have accidental high yields. The first cut was not as good as these, all right? I'm talking about Huntington Bank shares, Truist Financial, Best Buy, Whirlpool, and Digital Realty. We got a lot of Mad Money ahead, including Mike Susan, with a company that's kind of pivoting called Masimo. After falling from its 2021 highs, are investors getting a buying opportunity in the medical technology company that has some very interesting blood oximeter work? I'm going to check with the CEO. Then I've always been in favor of the democratization of the market, but there's a new alarming factor that has me questioning my own stance. I'll reveal it. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. What do we do with the medical technology companies that made fortunes when COVID was at its worst? But, you know, look, COVID runs its course. Their stocks have plummeted. Take Masimo Corporation, which is best known for its blood oxygen pulse rate monitoring devices. I don't know about you. I use mine every morning during the height of COVID. Here's a stock that's nearly doubled from the 150s before the pandemic to 305 last November. But since then, it's given back all of its gains and then some, plummeting to $135 today. Now, some of this is simply because every COVID winter has been hit. We know that. Some of it's because Massimo issued a lukewarm full-year outlook in January, followed by a negative pre-announcement in late March. They're dealing with component shortages like everybody else and struggling to fill their international orders. They also announced the acquisition of a consumer electronics company called Sound United in February, a deal that, candidly, I don't really understand. Now, late last month, I got a call from Massimo during the lightning round, so I issued an open invitation to the company to come on the show. Since then, the company's reported a better-than-expected quarter with more bullish guidance. Stock's begun to rebound from its lows. So has it already bottomed? Let's check in with Joe Chiani. He is the founder, chairman, CEO of Massimo Corporation. Mr. Chiani, welcome back to Mad Money.
Great to be with you, Jim.
All right, so, Joe, we had some problems with components. A lot of other companies did, too. But it was never demand, right? The demand was always good. So now kind of right back into where things were before the shortage, including with the labor issue, correct?
Correct. Demand has never been stronger. Despite COVID ending, which I think is a great thing, not just for the world, but for Massimo as well, the demand is quite strong. Had we been able to meet the demand, we would have exceeded the numbers that were expected. But unfortunately, supply chain finally caught up with us. We think we've caught up with it, but, you know, you never know. Once bitten, twice a shot.
Drew,
so
now,
we'll be watching it.
Now, I know you're the highest quality, and every morning I would measure during that period, always hoping for north of 93, and always knew and had my wife wear it, too, because we knew what was the right one. Now, you've got a bunch of new things. With in front of me is the Massimo Safety Net Alert. Could you tell us how that works?
Yes. Well, I was on your show, I think, a few years ago, where we said we're going to create this thing to help with the opioid epidemic, because many people were dying from opioid overdose at home. 20,000 a year from prescription opioids, another 80,000 from illicit. Well, we still haven't got it cleared yet for sale in the U.S., but during COVID, we pivoted and made that product into something hospitals could use to transfer the COVID patients that weren't in need of critical care home and bring them in when that oxygen saturation dropped below 93. And it became a lifesaver. Hundreds of hospitals used it. People took it home, wore it on their finger. The data was transmitted via their phone to the cloud, and a central monitor at the hospital was able to watch everything and everybody and bring them in as needed.
Now, you made an acquisition that, as I mentioned, I was curious about because I think the quality of the stuff, that's not an issue. It's the best there is. It's the Sound United acquisition, 100 years of audio mastery, and how that fits in with the company as I knew it before the acquisition.
Well, thanks for asking. I've always sought out problems that I thought we could solve. The problem I see ahead of us, or the opportunity I see, is helping people stay healthy at home and only require medical care, hospital care, professional care when it's absolutely needed. We see the Sound United acquisition as a fantastic opportunity to help us accomplish that goal. Not only because of their 20,000 point distribution channel that they built over decades, that now we can plop this product called the W1, which we just announced under limited market release, the first continuous accurate pulse oximetry biosensing watch. But we can take all of their audio technology, combine it with our signal processing prowess, and hopefully create incredible new products like earbuds that not only help you with biosensing, but can enhance your hearing.
All right, now let's talk about that. It was something I know quite a bit about. I suffer from tinnitus, sir, and I've developed a medicine with Dr. Larry Newman that we think is going to not cure it, but really keep it at bay. But I have to wear Zeman's when it's really bad. I wear a Zeman's mask, and it's $1,700, and it's by far the most expensive, least effective device I've ever bought. I believe with Marantz technology, which I remember from when I was growing up, is the absolute best sound, that it's impossible for Masimo not to develop something superior to Siemens, which, by the way, owns every single hospital from what I can tell, because that's all you ever get if you need a master or a hearing aid. Can you develop a product linked to my iPhone that will make it so I can hear other people and still lead my life? Because it's very hard for me to do right now.
Well, I won't promise a cure for tinnitus, but what I can tell you, we see incredible opportunities to democratize improved hearing in a way that doesn't stick out and make people feel uncomfortable. Look, we started Masimo with the idea of taking adaptive filters, very complicated signal processing, to physiological measurement. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to take that same technology, same core competency, to hopefully make these devices like the one you want me to make and make it affordable, make it work. Look, every product that we've made has made a huge difference. Look at our pulse oximetry technology. All other studies, for whether it was for blindness of babies in the NICU or recently monitoring people with COVID, nothing ever showed that the technology made a difference. Yet with our technology, Masimo SET pulse oximetry, every outcome study has been positive, including monitoring COVID patients.
Well, look, I'm counting on you.
That's what we want to do.
I'm counting on you. I know you can do it because your stuff works, because I've used it during the pandemic. I'm hoping you extend this and get this right, because everybody else can't seem to do it. Joe Kiani, Masimo founder, chairman, and CEO, MASI. Thank you so much for being on the show. Always great to see you, sir.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you, Jim.
They make good stuff. You may have used it. I used it during the pandemic. I am willing to give them the benefit of the doubt to see if they can't develop these incredibly important devices, whether it be opioid, whether it be for hearing. These are really integral to people's lives. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up next.
Let's make money together. What do we got?
Kramer's bringing the thunder and answering your burning questions in today's edition of The Lightning Round.
Before we get started, a special programming note. I want to remind you to tune in to the News with Shepard Smith tonight. Shep is live from Buffalo with the latest details on that tragic mass shooting. And now, let's get to our writing. That's where I take some calls, rapid fire, one after another.
Bye-bye.
Just be clear, I don't know the call, stop questions, I might play this song. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Ski Daddy? Time for the lightning round. Let's start with Frank in New York. Frank.
Yes, Frank of Pelham. Jim, I just want to thank you for your integrity and your honesty.
Oh, thank you, Frank. Man, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. How can I help you?
Jim, I've had a position in Marvell for probably over 2 years.
Okay.
And I just think, and I didn't sell it at 90, I can kick myself, but I'm certainly not going to sell it here. I just think they're on the verge of an explosive future. And I just wanted to get your thoughts.
I totally agree with you. I mean, look, they are the best when it comes to 5G, the best high-performance computing. But remember, those things have fallen out of favor right now. So the stock has the ability to fall. We own a big position actually for my challenge to us. Now, we did this. We did sell some. But I'd like to buy more. That's the way to go. Dustin in Kansas. Dustin.
Big booyah to you, Jim.
Booyah back.
Hey, I'm calling about a company that's been on your show a couple of times in the last year, and you've recommended it in the past. It's a high-growth stock, and I know it's been brutal. I'm calling because I'm a 33-year-old investor looking with a 5- to 10-year horizon. Jim, I'm looking for your opinion if I should buy more shares at this level, hold or sell. The ticker is STIM. S-T-E-M.
Well, I mean, look, this was about our grid being second rate, not being able to figure out how to do storage of electronics. But that was then. This is now. That it got very, very high. We moved away from companies that don't make money, but because you have a 5-year time horizon, you can stick with it. We're not recommending stocks that don't lose money now, though. Let's go to Petey in California, please.
Jimmy Choo.
Yes.
Jimmy Choo from Prime Business here, looking for some pearls of wisdom. With its blowout quarter in the holster lab this past week, is ABCL ready to roll?
You know, they're okay. I mean, I tend to be a little suspicious. It's down 45% Vancouver company. But they do make money, and I will give them that, although it's not exciting when you've got so many great companies like Pfizer that make a lot of money and are inexpensive. Let's go to David in California, please. David.
Oh, hi, Jim. Thanks for everything you do.
Of course.
I got a question for you on Starwood Property Trust.
Uh-huh.
It's STWD.
Of course.
It's got a really steady dividend for years and years. I just wonder what buy, sell, or hold.
No, I would own that. That's Barry Stern. Like, what he does best is work at that company. I'm not sure about the various SPACs. They don't really intrigue me anymore. But this is a very profitable company with a very good yield and a very good manager. Let's go to John in Florida, please. John.
Hey, Mr. Kramer. Thanks for taking the call.
Of course, John. What's going on?
Hey, I've got a question about a stock that I'm currently down 35%. Do I buy, sell, or hold Capri Holdings?
Remember, Mad Money, we don't care where stocks come from. We care where it's going to. However, that stock is such a low multiple. It obviously means that people are thinking it's going to have a shortfall. I think it's okay, but apparel is very out of favor with this market. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade. Coming up, can the markets offer a little too much freedom to young investors? A cautionary tale. What you need to know before you ride the world's greatest wealth machine. Next.
I've always been a big believer in the democratization of the stock market. If something makes it easier for the little guy to feel comfortable owning stocks, well, my gut assumption is it's a good thing. But now, for the second time in my life, I'm actually questioning that judgment. Without real education, I'm beginning to worry that promoting stock ownership for anybody and everybody has led us to a bad place because the risks are too great. This morning, J.P. Morgan put out a cogent and devastating piece of research on the company Robinhood, which has been the principal democratizer of this generation. The piece, An Underrate, which is Wall Street speaking for sell, put the case pretty bluntly. Now, I'm going to do it. It's kind of a They did it in kind of a cursive way, but I'm going to say, just quote it. Robinhood customer underperformance could weigh on activity for extended period of time, end quote. Second paragraph, same way. It says, Robinhood clients losing money and underperforming. The goal of democratizing access to financial services has not been working well for Robinhood investors for the last three quarters through first quarter 22. Volumes falling as retail participation declines. Ouch. People who know me know I loved Robinhood when I first sold the app years and years ago because it made it easy for people to buy stocks. Same way I loved the original electronic brokers in the 90s, low commission seemed great. In retrospect, I guess they made it too easy with the no commission, the easy, the funny emojis. People bought pretty much whatever they wanted, whether it was suitable for them or not, and there weren't any grown-ups around to warn them when to ring the register. Now, you could say, hey, that's the price of knowledge. But we had the same democratic revolution happen once before, back in the late 90s. And it ended so badly that we lost a generation of potential investors. I think the same thing is happening now. Total repetition. Some of it's because the companies that are doing well at the moment are not exactly Gen Z friendly. Oil and gas, agriculture, some drug stocks. But most of it, like in the dot-com collapse, comes down to overconfidence. Back then, people were making so much money on every new IPO that you felt like you were insane if you didn't try to get a piece of one. Plus, the runs of some of those stocks, they just went on and on. They were like money trees. Of course, if you weren't greedy back then, you actually could have made a fortune. But you had to sell your winners. If you let things ride, you got killed. This time around, we had a different phenomenon. The meme stock period, which is defined by J.P. Morgan as a moment in time, February 2020 to February 2021. Where the Robinhood investors were clubbing the market. Again, not unlike March of 1999 to March of 2000, where the gains seemed endless. The two periods were different in one way, though. The younger people had no contempt for the older people back in 1999 because, well, then they were just thrilled that they were allowed to join the club. In 2020 to 2021, though, the objective was to destroy the club. Looking back on both periods, they never seemed to be about the discipline of making money, which is what I'm about. Now, I'm not backing away from my view that we should democratize the stock market. Nobody should be kept out. But I do think we need more education, kind of like what I do for the CNBC Investing Club, because that's the only way these new investors will keep investing over the long haul. I'm not just plugging the club. I simply want people to remember what they're feeling right now. Stocks can go down and large pools of money can and are lost overnight by going on margin or buying endless numbers of expiring options or just by buying crummy, expensive stocks. I know the stock market can be a great wealth creator, but if you're not careful, it's also a great wealth destroyer. So please, I'm begging you, be careful. It's getting too easy to lose money for all. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. The news with Shepard Smith starts now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.